Welcome to The Excellent Fiduciary, a podcast from Roland Chris, where we explore what it takes to meet and exceed the demands of managing a retirement plan in today's complex market. From regulatory developments to fiduciary news and practical tips, tune in to The Excellent Fiduciary for your step-by-step guide to achieving compliance and confidence in a new fiduciary era. Now, let's begin today's show with an introduction from our Roland Chris host.
Welcome to our audience for this podcast on the Pathways to Excellence channel, sponsored by Roland Chris. Hi, I'm Ron Hagen, Chairman of the Fiduciary Standards Committee at Roland Chris, and I'm the host of today's live 15-minute podcast. Our subject is going to focus on retirement plans qualified under the Employee Retirement Income Security Act, or ERISA, as we'll call it. And we're going to focus in on the importance of a periodic comprehensive review of ERISA qualified plans. During our last podcast, we discussed the emerging governance, risk management, and compliance methods that are coming into practice among employee benefit plan managers. But during today's podcast, we're going to take a close look at a key step that human resource managers are taking in order to assure themselves that their management approach is on the right path before the Department of Labor shows up for a surprise employee benefit plan audit. With me today in the studio is our guest, Christine Denton. She is Senior Vice President and Head of Roland Chris's Risk Practice Group. She has over 13 years of experience with Roland Chris conducting risk management assessments of retirement plans in both the commercial and nonprofit sectors. Christine has served as an expert witness in disputes representing defendant positions in breach of fiduciary duty claims. And during an earlier assignment with Roland Chris, she personally conducted over 150 assessments of candidates for fiduciary certifications by CFEX, with those candidates located in the U.S., Canada, Australia, and New Zealand. She earned a bachelor's degree in finance from Baylor University. She holds the Certified Foundation Fiduciary Specialist designation, is an accredited investment fiduciary analyst, and has also held licenses issued by the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, or FINRA. We were fortunate to be able to get space on your calendar for today's podcast, Christine, so welcome.
Thank you. I'm glad to be able to share my time with you and your audience today.
Christine, I think it's safe to say that setting up an employee benefit plan is hard work. Once past that point, though, it seems that some plans tend to drift away from offering what's best for employees and expose the companies that sponsor them to undue risk. What do you think about that?
Well, there's no question that what you said is true. All you need to do is read Department of Labor reports and see how many retirement plan sponsors are getting fined for operating plans that don't comply with federal pension law. The solution is actually pretty simple. Once set up, a periodic review by a qualified expert is the most often ignored part of the entire retirement plan management process. In today's world, a comprehensive review of an employee benefit plan qualified under ERISA is a necessity. Combined with a rating, it can show where gaps and required steps exist and how to improve them.
You just used two words that I think could use a bit more explanation. Those words are comprehensive and rating. First, what makes a plan review comprehensive?
For years, vendors of employee benefit services like investments, record keeping, and 401k plans have used the term plan review to describe their offer to evaluate certain parts of a prospective client's existing plans, in many cases offering to do the work for free. But some vendors provide their existing clients with an annual report the vendors label a plan review. While they might make interesting reading, those types of reviews really have serious shortcomings.
Since many in our audience today manage their company's retirement plans, I expect that they might like to hear you briefly describe some of those shortcomings. Could you do that for us?
Sure. Here are a couple of examples to illustrate what I mean. The scope of the typical review offered by a vendor is limited to the vendor's narrowly defined area of interest. For example, investment firms focus on the performance of a retirement plan's investment options, while record keepers tend to produce statistical measurements that present how participants use the retirement plan's features. The data contained in the typical plan review support the viewpoint of the vendor that produced the report, but rarely represents the viewpoint of the plan sponsor, nor do the methods used to produce most reviews conform to a defined standard. A plan sponsor's viewpoint spans multiple disciplines, not just the discipline served by a particular vendor. The Department of Labor puts the burden for being skilled in those disciplines on the plan sponsors and not the vendors. And our research reveals that a wide gap in knowledge exists among finance and human resource managers about those disciplines. Another major shortcoming of a typical plan review is that it fails to present a fair analysis of the compensation paid to the plan's vendors. And that's because it's unnatural for vendors to be critical of the value of their own services. The value of a vendor's services is a critical part of a plan sponsor's evaluation of vendor compensation under ERISA. So in other words, a plan review must somehow prove that fees paid to the plan's vendors are proper, even if the fees alone benchmark on the low side against industry comparisons.
I think you're suggesting that the yardstick then used for conducting a plan review needs to include more than just investment results and usage statistics. What then establishes a proper yardstick in this situation?
Well, fortunately, the answer to that question has been defined by the U.S. Department of Labor's interpretation of ERISA and the way it enforces it. There are four parts or disciplines that define how organizations are expected to manage their retirement and welfare benefit plans. The responsibility for managing those disciplines falls solely on the plan administrator, as we mentioned earlier. That's the person that signs the plan's Form 5500.
Before you go too much further with that, I wonder if you could just pause for a moment and briefly discuss those disciplines for us.
Well, a very useful handbook was developed that presents the disciplines in quite a bit of detail. It's something that every plan sponsor should have a copy of, and it can be purchased online from the Investment Fiduciary Leadership Council at www.iflcouncil.org. The four disciplines in the book, as they're described, are named Governance, Administration, Investments, and Controls. The handbook I just mentioned breaks out each discipline into 17 objectives and 22 steps. They're practical and they're easy to understand, and taken together, they draw a very complete picture of what plan administrators should do. A comprehensive plan review uses those disciplines as its yardstick, and anything called a review that doesn't cover them would be considered incomplete.
Any review that has 17 objectives and 72 steps is going to cover a lot of ground, I imagine.
Yes, that's correct. I think you could summarize the reason for that by recognizing what we're trying to achieve. Plan administrators need an unbiased assessment of the status of their fiduciary management system. In order to ensure that no bias exists, the firm conducting the review should not be a vendor of any other type of service that the employee benefit plans purchase.
I have to admit, I'm wondering if you are saying, for example, that investment firms are biased when it comes to conducting comprehensive plan reviews.
Well, some of the greatest employee benefit plan catastrophes in American history employed well-known investment firms that performed plan reviews on which the plan's manager relied. Investigations into the causes of those catastrophes show a common theme. These plan reviews failed to address key governance and vendor issues that led to the most serious problems. Those issues were either mistakenly or purposely excluded from the reviews. And I don't mean to say that investment firms are necessarily responsible for employee benefit plan catastrophes. I'm just saying that executives and managers that are responsible for their employees' ERISA plan should shy away from hiring an expert for certain work that requires complete separation from a conflicted role. And a comprehensive plan review fits that situation.
I know from my own experience here at the firm, from hundreds of reviews that Roland Chris has performed, that most of our clients see their fiduciary management system like they've never seen it before after we've conducted a review. And I wonder if you could give us some areas of sensitivity that a comprehensive plan review is likely to reveal. And what does your experience show in that regard?
As you might expect, the list of exception items generated from a comprehensive plan review can be quite long, especially for a retirement plan that has not had a review in a while or for one that is embarking on their very first review. There isn't enough time today to mention them all, so I'll try to group the exceptions by discipline in the order of their importance. Topping the list is the governance discipline, and many of the critical elements of that discipline are almost always missing. Those missing parts, combined with the omission of vital steps in the control discipline, form a breeding ground for most of the lawsuits and DOL fines for breach of fiduciary duty.
What about the investment administration disciplines? Do you find that ERISA plans miss critical elements there?
The investment and administration disciplines are usually in much better shape. I think it's fairly clear why. First, it seems to be a natural for plan fiduciaries to focus on investments because the primary purpose of a retirement plan is to generate good returns. Plus, many retirement plans are sold by investment advisors, so that discipline gets a lot of attention already. Record keepers as well sell a large number of retirement plans, and like investment firms, they perform the job well as a general rule. So their service is much more conducive to statistical measurement, and that makes the administration discipline subject to easier review and analysis than the governance and controls discipline. However, I should say that this situation is changing as consolidations in the record-keeping market continues to unfold. Mergers are creating new problems in the administration discipline, and these are typically centered around fees and quality of service. But before we move ahead, I need to say that despite what vendors are telling their clients about the reasonableness of their fees, many, many participants are still paying excessive fees for retirement plan services, which puts their employers in a pretty tough spot without really realizing it.
Those are great points you've made, and I personally feel they are compelling reasons for plan sponsors to get in front of the issues you've discussed by going through a comprehensive plan review. So in closing then, what should plan administrators expect when they commission a review of that type?
Sensitive to what I will call audit fatigue in the employee benefits world, we constructed our firm's assessment to be as streamlined for our clients as possible. I won't go into a lot of detail about the actual assessment steps in our limited time today, but here are the major items that we typically will examine. Starting with the governance discipline, we will look at things like authority to manage the plan, whether or not appropriate policies and processes and documentation are in place. In the administration discipline, we might look at execution of the plan's actual operations with respect to the record-keeping functions and things of that nature, timeliness of reporting, whether or not vendors have been selected and are being monitored appropriately, and then compliance issues. Under the investment discipline, we would look at the strategy and the investment policy employed with respect to selection and monitoring of those investments, as well as the tactics of the money managers that have been employed and their reporting and monitoring of the investment options. And then in the controls discipline, we would kind of come full circle and audit and test the internal procedures that have been set and established in the other three disciplines. We would also take some time here to test prohibited transaction exemptions, look at fees, and test conflicts of interest as well.
Boy, a plan review that covers those categories is going to produce a lot of information, and I'm wondering how a chief financial officer, a human resource manager, or a benefits committee actually evaluates the results.
Well, if you remember at the start of the podcast, I did use the word rating.
Oh, yes. Well, thank you. I wanted to come back to it before we finished it, and we're just about out of time, but could you just tell us briefly, what is a rating and how does it work?
Simply put, a rating translates the results of a comprehensive review of an ERISA-qualified plan into a value, and that's going to show how the plan's management system stacks up to the yardstick. Roland Criss's Qualified Plan Rating, or QPR rating, is a valuable tool, not only for revealing where a plan sponsor stands in relation to ERISA's yardstick, but it maps a pathway for ongoing improvements as well.
Christine, thank you so much for all of your great insights today. We're just about out of time. We greatly appreciate your participation on the show. And for our audience, here's a reminder to tune in to our next podcast. If you miss it on our live channel, be sure to retrieve it from our website at rolandchriss.com. Thank you for joining us, and have a great day.